Blog Talk Radio.
Unbothered. Impermeable. Unbothered. Impermeable. Unbothered. I'm the people's champ. Obama. And you don't understand. Melania. Permeable. Unbothered. Sick. Allergic to the con artist. Fake woke. An imposter. Only real ones up in my roster. Like Junior C. That's my roster. You know I just been
Sasha, you here? What's up, fam? Sasha, I don't hear you.
How you?
Oh, I was on mute.
Oh. Okay, I was wondering. I was saying to myself.
All right. Wow. I'm waiting, like, I hear things in the background. All right. Well, that sums up exactly how my day went today. I'm sure everybody at my job is sick of me hearing me complain about it taking almost 3 hours for me to get to work this morning.
Oh, man.
So
that was everybody.
What was going, like, did they have an accentuated amount of humans taking public transportation today? I don't know.
I don't know. Everything was messed up. Traffic, everything.
Oh, my God. It was a disaster. I've never seen so many people on the train. I don't know what was going on. All I know is that if you don't have to go into Manhattan during rush hour, please don't do it, because it is just a disaster.
Well, you heard what the word around town is. We full. We full. That's
well,
what Humpty Trumpy's saying. We full. We full.
Yeah, we are full. Yeah, they should have returned me back to my house. I could have gotten more sleep. What are we full of? You know, I don't even watch that, because it just puts too much badness on my spirit. What are we? Are we full of people? Is that what they're? Is
well,
that what
we know what he's full of.
Yeah, but you know something, we all have to get to a point now where we realize what this is and we realize what we are dealing with, and particularly people of African-American descent. You know, I often think about when we were on the plantation and we saw the corruptest, corrupt people that were coming in and out of the plantation, the things that they were doing. And we would just look at each other and just shake our heads, because over the past 400 years, because we're celebrating, I shouldn't say celebrate, but yes, we should, because we're still here. But we are commemorating the 400 years, basically from 1619. There's been a lot of programs dealing with this 400-year time lapse that we as African people have been in this part of the world. And you know, we've experienced this. We know what this is. You talk about separating children. You talk about the trauma that the children go through. Who better to understand, who better to be the social workers and the psychologists and the psychiatrists of what it's like to be separated, first of all, in Africa, the separation from your family in Africa. And then when you get here, to be sold and the things we went through, we know this. We live this. This is in our DNA. This is in our epigenetics. Mm-hmm. So that when people say, how could you be so horrible? Well, have you forgotten American history? Have you forgotten what African people went through on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're still in the throes of this. We're still in the psychological trauma of what we've experienced because it's been handed down. Because even now, when you think about something that Malcolm X once said about what the social worker that was in his home in Lansing, Michigan, did to his family, and what social workers and foster homes do to the communities today, we're still going through this. And so, you know, whatever they say, we have to understand something. First of all, they lie, they steal, and they cheat. And they tolerate those that do. So whatever come out of their mouth, we ought to know. We ought to know what they're doing. We ought to know what's coming. And we also should know something that Queen Mother Moore, a wonderful sister from years back, used to say to us all the time. She said, when it comes to people like that, below, when you're thinking about how low can they go, she used to say, below is below. There's no place that they won't go. We have to start working very hard at this. We have to understand, we have to roll back our sleeves. And family, I understand, well, you, of course, you know firsthand things that I've said within the House presentations. We must take full responsibility for the conditions we find ourselves in. I understand we can blame. I understand that. We can blame. But the thing is that when we see what's happening, we need to take control over our own lives and do what's necessary for ourselves, for our families, for our communities. We have got to do this. If you're waiting for someone to come along with some kind of moral compass,
it's
in the mail.
That's the thing. I use this to this day. You know, Daddy never used to let us come to him with a problem without having at least 1, 2, 3, or 4 solutions, A, B, and C, and D. Like, and I use that to this day. Like, I never go to anybody and say, I need this fixed, this is the problem, without having a solution of my own. Because 9 times out of 10, 9.5 times, whatever I ask for, I get. Because I present it in a way in which, you know, so say I don't have enough tokens to get on the bus. You know, so what do? I'll tell them, well, I want to raise money in order to get enough tokens to get on the bus. That's a resolution to a problem that I see. You know, a lot of times we don't come with solutions. We just want to complain. But how can you fix it? And how can you make this a better world? And how can you make your life? How can you make your life a little bit easier? Because we can't complain about something if we're not being the change that we want to see in this world or bringing the change to the forefront that needs to be done in order for us to live in this world and be a better place.
And most of the time when you try to bring a problem to somebody else, they will never care as much as you care about your own problem. So no matter what you say, you're always going to care more. So you're not going to get the type of results you want if you're asking somebody else to fix a problem that will benefit your life. Because their primary, even with when people drive in the car, I think it is always safer for, like, if you have a child or something, like, to sit behind the driver. Because the safest place in the car to be, allegedly, that's what they say, is behind the driver. Because in a moment of emergency, the first thing, human instinct, is to think about yourself. And that's why they have to make those announcements on the plane. Like, well, no, actually, that would be the opposite. That's the opposite, actually. But the first thing that you think about is yourself.
Yeah.
You think about saving people, so your body automatically turns the car, you know, to save yourself.
It's a natural instinct. And we also have to realize that, you know, when it comes to these sort of events and making sure that you're for yourself and advocating for yourself, like you said, we are our best advocates. We're passionate about us. we have to worry about us. We have to make sure that we're good, and we have to stand up for ourselves. And so many people are shushed. So many people, and I think you've talked about this, Sasha, before. So many people are just nervous to even bring up issues or bring up problems, you know, because they don't want to rattle, you know, anybody. They don't want to shake up the place. They don't want to, you know, cause any issues. But it's like, if you don't speak up for yourself, what do you, you know, you got to stand up for something or you fall for anything. Like, how are you advocating for yourself? And even like in my day to day, you know, my job is not to solve people's problems. My job is to allow those individuals to realize that they have their answer within themselves already and just evoke it.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, bring forth and just encourage them to really seek the answer. Because if I were to solve every problem, then you would constantly come to me to solve the problems, as opposed to really sitting and giving you the tools in order to find it within yourself, so that you don't depend on somebody else to help you with your life's problems. You're able to help yourself.
People, it's much easier to have someone else, like, to not deal with your problems. Most people are much happier minding everybody's business. They can't even consider focusing on their problems.
But that's the thing, like, a lot of people do that. They'll, like, point out other people's flaws. Like, it was funny, I worked today, my coworkers, because we sit in very close quarters, they thought it was very fascinating, because I was on the phone with one of my girls, and she was telling me about an issue that she had with one of the other coworkers. So now this other coworker always points out people's flaws, blows people's, you know, problems that they've, you know, had with certain cases, and blows it up and points the finger. But this time, this specific coworker was wrong, saying, you know what? I said, that's really funny, because when you point the finger, when you blow other people's spot up, you open yourself up to now people going to wait for you to mess up. And everybody's going to mess up. Nobody's perfect. You know, but she does it so often that people are just waiting and waiting, waiting, and say, okay, we're going to get you. One little slip up and we're going to see what happens. And, you know, it was just the way in which I approached it. She's, you know, because I was very stern about the situation, and I was very, you know, I was providing emotional support to one of the girls that works under me. Well, not under me, but one of the girls that I supervise. So I was telling her, like, you know, you should stand up, you should speak for yourself, you should speak up, and you should say something to make sure that this person understands that, you know, we understand you made a mistake. We're not gonna, you know, blow up your spot how you do to everybody else, but realize that the moment that you sit there and try to pick everybody else's flaw, You open yourself up to now your flaws are being picked out to the max. You know, because the second you point your finger at somebody else, you got four reports. The whole saying, but it's like, we often want to deflect and to point other people's flaws out and hope that nobody notices our flaws. But it's like, we all have them. We all have flaws. We all deal with certain situations in our lives that, you know, we deal with, and it may not be the most ideal situation, but you move past it, because if everybody was perfect, we would be robots, and even robots aren't perfect. And who wants to live in a perfect world?
But you know, that goes straight to the topic that we were talking about today, because I think that it was basically about social media, and you don't have to be responsible for your words anymore. Like, there's no consequences for you saying things, because people either use it for fuel, or like, people use negative comments either for fuel to make themselves feel better, like that they're fighting against negative comments, or people just don't take responsibility for it. Like, nobody is taking responsibility for the things that they're saying anymore. They or not that. They either they use it as fuel or they ignore it altogether. That's what it is. Like, sometimes people turn off the commenting. Like Jussie Smollett still hasn't turned his commenting back on. Like,
well, that's
because
the thing. Like,
because
we
the internet will rip you apart.
But it's also like, who cares what this person, Joe Schmo, has to say about what you've done and the choices that you've made in your life? Why does it matter? We care too much as a people, and not just black people, because other races feel the same way. Like, we care too much what people think. And here's the thing. At the end of the day, how does that affect your life? How does that affect your family? How does that affect your money? How does that affect the way you feel about yourself? Like, it should not matter what anybody else says about you. Because the second that you worry about what other people think about you, you're living your life for them.
I think it's still trying to impress people. Like, people are still trying to impress other people. So, it's bigger, and I think just adding to what you're saying, it's bigger than just trying to impress, it's bigger than thinking that, or that looking for validation. It's also trying to be better than someone else. A lot of the time when we see things that people are writing about us, it's about comparing ourselves to other people. And I don't think that we care, but I think that we care more because it affects how people look at us. Like, not that we care what people think, but that we care how it compares to people that we believe are doing better than us. Like, even, it's not really a spoiler, but I'll say, like, even in the movie Us, one of the concepts, when they were on the beach, the father was so distressed because the other guy, his friend, you know, Gabe was upset because his friend had better, you know, a better boat or a better car or better, but he still had a boat.
Mm-hmm.
He still had
mm-hmm.
a car. He still had a
mm-hmm.
summer home. So it's like you're constantly looking to be better, you're constantly looking at what the person next to you has, but you're
mm-hmm.
not taking into account what you have. And I think that was one of the themes of the movie. Like, you have this, but you're looking at the person next to you and saying they have something better, but not taking into account what you have.
Yeah, no, but it's true, because it's like, and it also goes to the bigger concept of, we don't appreciate what we have. We're not, like, even
Absolutely
when it comes
not.
To special events in our lives, we're so focused on capture this on picture, capture this on video. You know, I need to show the world about this, that you're not even living in the moment and enjoying yourself. You know, people don't really understand what true joy is. And a lot of times, you know, my mom, shout out, Mommy. My mom will say, send pictures. And I'm just like, I'm having too much fun at the events that I go to that I'm not even near
my phone.
I'm not even thinking about taking pictures, you know, because we're having so much fun that our main goal is not to sit there and get a picture. You know, in society and social media teaches you that you need to put on for the gram. You need to pretend like you're having fun and do certain things. Like, I've even witnessed it where people will pretend to fake laugh for pictures in order to get that feel of laughter and joy. And it's like people are trying so much to be what they think they need to be that they're ending up being the opposite because they're so miserable trying to keep up with what this quote-unquote persona that they're trying to portray is. When in reality, the people that portray that persona is not even the people that portray that persona, you know. And Daddy and I, you know, I did actually for my 5-day e-course, True Beauty Inside and Out, I did a mind-ish segment. And in that mind-ish segment, we discussed, and my dad was saying to me that he was watching, I forgot what exactly it was, but it was a model that came out, and they were saying, and she was looking at, I think it was a cover girl, and she was looking at the cover of the cover girl, and she was like, damn, she was like, that's, like, I look so beautiful that I aspire to look like that in real life. And it's like, these people don't even look, sound, or act or live the lives that they're portraying, but you have other people, impressionable people, thinking, oh my God, I'm like, look at these people, I want to be just like them, when they're not even like them. It's a whole mindish, you know, circle. It's mind-blowing.
I didn't mean to cut you off, but it's also like with what's going on with the school thing. Like, everybody is so, like, so desperate to get their kids in certain schools, but then it's like you're getting your kids in the schools, but then they're not properly equipped once they get out into the real world. Everybody is so focused on being good enough for, like, the Joneses. They're focused on the destination and not focused on the journey. And I think that's one of the biggest problems that we, and social media has made it just atrocious. It's made it really, really bad because everyone sees the destination, but they don't see the journey. It was something that, you know, you have to watch, like, documentaries to see the journey that people go through. And you realize that it could take people years. One of the people that I've been looking at a lot lately is Gary Vee, who's on Instagram. Have you heard of him, Candace?
Maybe. You know I'm not doing names.
Okay. Anyway, he is someone that is a significant motivational speaker, businessman, all this other stuff on Instagram. And when you see him, you see the Gary Vee that's out now. But you don't see, like, he does videos where he shows what, and I didn't mean to blow you up, sis. I forgot that I didn't mean to blow you up like that. We asked you if you know who it was. I just was interested. He shows videos. He shows videos of his progress, and I mean, even the way he looks, even the lighting in the video is like you know, in the basement with a white background, like it looked completely different than it does now. He looks completely different. He looks more like he's more well put together. He's been doing this for years. He's 40 now, but he's been doing this forever. And so everybody is so, like, they see him now, and they want to be like him now, but they don't see the 10 to 15 years it took for him to, or probably longer than that, but you don't see the 10 to 15 years that people put in. Even our dad, he's been doing this for more than 30 years, maybe more than 40. It might be damn near 40 years. Are you there, Daddy? Did you step up?
I'm here.
How long did it take you to get to the position where you're at now?
Well, I began teaching formally in Gary, Indiana, in August of 1977.
Okay, that's what, 32 years?
Yeah, but I was into communications even before that, in 1973. That's something else that I was in. But the point that you're making is very valid in terms of what it takes. And I know that your mother and I mean, I used to say to her, one day, you know?
Yeah.
And
I
think of the story
years.
Of Noah. I think of the story of Noah in the Bible.
That's a great story.
When he was building his ark, and he was telling people, a flood is coming. Everybody laughed at him. They mocked him. They joked him. Because it was sunshine. It was beautiful.
Yep.
Everybody laughed. And he kept building. See, this is a symbolic metaphor is what I'm saying. With due respect to people who might really believe that happened, okay, I respect your belief system, so I don't want to go there. I'm telling this story from a metaphor perspective, something that represents a truth but is not coming out straight out and saying. And the idea is that when you believe in something, no matter what you may want to do, musician, artist, computer analyst, whatever, doctor, whatever it is in your life that you want to do, for FedEx or UPS, not that there's anything wrong with that job, but there are jobs that you might have to take in order to put food on the table and pay your rent. There are things that you might have to do. But it's not where your heart is. But don't ever lose the passion for what you believe in. And what I think is that everybody thinks that, like what you were saying earlier, that with Gary B, that when they see him do what he does, and they admire it and they want to do that, they forget. I'll go to Chris Brown. I'll go to musicians and rappers that young people watch and emulate and respect and want to be like. But they don't realize the work it took for Chris Brown to do that
dance. Yeah.
How many times Beyonce had to sing that song?
Mm-hmm.
The hours of practice, the pain in her legs from dancing, you know, but still, but that's her passion. That's what everybody does. But when you like something and you're young and you might be a little immature, you think that because they make it look so easy, that it is easy to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not that way. You have to work. You have to work very hard. But you never give up. You never give up your flavor. You never give up your dreams. You just keep working at it. Keep working at it. But this generation, and the way I used to practice it with children, is that I will tell them, I'll give you 2 cookies right now, but I'll give you 5 cookies if you can wait till Friday. It's a test you give for immediate gratification. You can tell a lot about somebody. Now, I mean, you could use anything as an example of what it is that you're talking about, but I'm using cookies just as an example of a child looking at the cookies and wanting it now, or a child that's thinking and saying, yeah, but you know,
only children,
if I just wait. This is adults too. But I just gave you the example I do with children to see where children are coming from. Because immediate gratification is something else that we all have to grow to, and it takes maturity. That if you can just wait and build, something better might be in your future. But you might grab something right. Like I know people that I've done business with that, okay, I'll give you some money to do something. This is just an example. Now, and then you don't do it. Okay, so you got a couple $100 from me. Okay, you made a couple $100 from me. But you lost thousands. Because I'll never do business with you again.
And you lost your integrity. Your integrity is
questioned. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Your
integrity is
shot.
Yeah. And that's what West Indian Archie told Malcolm X in the movie, Malcolm X. He said, all I have is my reputation. That's the only thing you're born with. You're born with a reputation. And once you sell that reputation, the price for its return normally is 7 times the amount that you sold it for.
But you know what's crazy is that people don't live by integrity anymore. They'd rather look good and get followers than to have integrity. But also, like, people get their bodies done, you know, as opposed to working out and doing it the natural way. They get the get-rich-quick scheme, the instant gratification of having that body that, you know, social media is telling you that you need to have, you know. And they post it as if they worked hard for it. And it's like, but you were not in the gym. You weren't shooting with me in the gym. You weren't in the gym working out to get that body. So why are you flaunting it as if, you know, this is something that you've worked hard to craft? As opposed to a quick, you know, nip and tuck that you did to the doctor. Like, you know, and is it worth the same amount if you've worked for that body or if you've just bought that body?
The question is something that Dr. Clark, my first homework assignment from him when I was a young man, told all of us, the young people that were there. He said, I want you to go home and look in the mirror and tell the person you're looking at that I love you and mean it. Because he said, if you can't do that, then there's nothing that anyone else can do for you. And what has happened is that we have started to love the illusion, like the story that you told earlier about the young lady that was a model, and she was on a front cover. And she said that she wished that she actually looked the way the cover looked, and it was her.
Yeah.
But there was so much photoshopping. There was so much that they did on that photo. Not that she was not unattractive, but that in order to make her look the way they wanted her to look, they had to photoshop her and make her somebody that she might not even recognize. And I think that a lot of what is going on is that we have just lost a sense of self-love.
Mm-hmm.
That there is somebody else that's being projected.
I don't think we had it.
Well, we at one time, that is, in humanity, that is something that has always been the fall of humanity. You can go back into ancient history, and you'll see that there. This is not something that was just invented in this generation. I wouldn't blame your generation for doing this. This is something that's been in humanity for many, many millennia, for millions of years since we first came into existence. It just took different forms. There was different things that came up. But I would never blame your generation for doing this, because your generation is attempting to do what it does to survive. And I think that it's going to be up to your generation, and that's why I appreciate the work that you all are doing, Sasha and Kandike, and all of your generation that's doing what it is, because you are now the generation that is going to have to adjust to the errors that our generation made. The baby boomers were a very selfish generation.
Mm-hmm.
And coming from the baby boom generation, I know what I had to work myself out. I'm not saying I'm not guilty of some of those concepts and ideas and behaviors. It's part of what you are when you're growing up. But the idea is that somebody has got to stop and put a hold on values and your priorities in life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that if you feel that you need to adjust your physical appearance, it should be through self-love and through your health that you want to live a healthier life. It shouldn't be so you can look like somebody else that probably don't even look like that themselves. And then you got these other folk out here who are at the weight that everybody wants to be, but they're living in hell because they would do anything for a cheesecake. And that's where you got these commercials on TV that play with your head. That say, you can lose weight and you can eat whatever you want. Look, I can eat chocolate cake. I can eat cheesecake. I eat three times a day. That's a lie. That's a lie. They're hustling you because they know if people want to look a certain way, but they still have the cravings. As an ex-smoker, I will always be an ex-smoker. I will always be at that point that if I have one cigarette, I'm going back to smoking cigarettes.
That's how I am with Pepsi.
And we have to have the discipline. We have to have and you know what's interesting about that, Sasha, is your Aunt Ruth loved Pepsi.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And she loved Pepsi so much she named her cat. We had two cats growing up. They were the orange cats. You know, we and I named mine Tiger, and she named hers Pepsi. So I guess it's in the genes.
Apparently. Can't escape family.
Hey, it can skip people, it can skip generations, but it's there. Can't escape it.
Uh-huh.
But then that goes back to the epigenetics of what we're experiencing as a people. You can't escape. We have members of our family that were on plantations that are living within us.
Mm-hmm.
They're memories that we cannot fight. And sometimes when you're in a job that is very much like a plantation, sometimes you start thinking like that. You start thinking about
or remembering
those thoughts.
Or feeling.
But it's because your job is the same environment like the plantation. It's reminding you of the last time you were on a plantation. You know, like I tell you one thing right now. I got a thing about boats. You know, because I know I got some ancestors up in me. Because, hey, everybody say, hey, man, you need to go on a cruise. I say, oh, no, I remember the last time I was on a boat, what happened to me. And they promised
me
a job.
That's always
the promised me a job. They said, come on the boat. I got a job for you, man. I guarantee you that you have a job. They didn't tell me they weren't going to pay me.
Oh, man.
And they did have a job for me, but I say that jokingly, but really what I'm saying is that we have these memories,
mm-hmm.
and they're in us. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, everybody wants to be acknowledged, accepted, you know, and approved. Those are the three A's, acceptance, approved,
mm-hmm.
and acknowledged. And we thrive for that. And social media is a beautiful thing. I mean, it is a phenomenal thing. It's not what it is. It's the spirit in which you use it that is that
mm-hmm.
makes it either good or makes it evil.
It's the intent
and,
behind the action.
And that's the way everything
yep.
always is. The invention of the pen and the pencil. The invention of the book. Two of the greatest revolutions that ever occurred was the paperback book and the disposable pen. Two
mm-hmm.
of the greatest revolutions. Because it brought knowledge and wisdom to the everyday people that never had it before. Because back in the day, if you had a book, that was like a work that you paid a lot of money for. If you had a pen, it was very expensive to write. So the everyday people didn't get a chance to read and write.
Well, also, during
the
slavery times, you weren't able to read and write.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's a whole nother conversation there. Absolutely. But, you know, the idea is that it's not what it is that's the problem. It's how you use it. Coming from the generation that I come from, to have this type of opportunity that we have right now, you weren't getting on. Back in my day when I was in the communications, you weren't getting into radio unless somebody put you on the radio. You couldn't,
uh-huh.
you know, Keithon Boyd couldn't have his own network. He couldn't do this.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't, you know, you could not have your own YouTube station. You had to know somebody.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful thing when people with great ideas can come before you and discuss issues that are phenomenal. But it's a horrible
mm-hmm.
thing when they come on and they beast you. I mean, they say things about you. They haunt you. They bully you. It's a horrible thing when they do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that is how you take a wonderful thing and you dirty it.
Mm.
So your generation is in, but y'all as a generation,
good and evil.
That's it, and that goes back to all time and space. That's what the Osirian drama was about.
Exactly.
So that's what you're dealing with here. These conditions that we face, situations have altered cases. Well, we have always experienced this. I experienced this in my generation. It wasn't this particular issue, but it was always.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Gang life was always around. Police brutality was always around. Nothing's new. It's just it's taken a new way because the civilization has advanced. It's brought new things to the forefront. And so your generation has got the challenge that what I see happening is really a great thing. I think good things are coming. But like Dr. King told us the night before he join the ancestors, we have some difficult days ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And we do. But, like he also said, we are going to get to the promised land.
Mm.
I may not get there with you. That's another thing he said. But he said, I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. And so your generation can't lose hope in what you see happening. You just got to fight the power because those powers are going to try to make you be convinced that there is no hope. And there is hope. There's always hope. People say to me, do you see hope in the future? And I always ask, is there a kindergarten class? Because if we have a kindergarten class, humanity will always have hope.
You know,
and
I was
I was talking about the Gary Vee thing because I've been watching some of the videos today, and one of the things that, like, people were asking him questions, and, like, they had issues, like, with one woman got on there, and she told him, she said, I say these, like, he curses a lot. He curses in every sentence, and he feels very confident about it. And the lady was saying she was a black woman, and she was asking him, she was like, I say the same exact things as you, but when I say things, I look bitchy. And she was, you know, they were going back and forth, and she was basically saying that, you know, when you say it, it's motivational, you sound great, you know, whatever, people feel good about it, but when I say it, I'm an angry black woman. And he was like, but to who? And I do realize that there are, and I've been asked this question before, like, who is they? Who is this person? And the one thing that he was saying is that who is in charge? Like, everybody feels like they have the right, especially now that social media is so, you know, is so validated. People think they have the right to validate your life. And something that I did learn from one of the videos that I was watching, and he's, you know, and you, I didn't learn it from him, but it just, it reiterated it. Who is in charge? We have the ability to do great things. And with even with social media, you have the ability to do great things. You have the ability to do horrible things. But you're, at the end of the day, you're the person that's in charge. Even in your mind, when you have all these issues going on in your mind and you have negative thoughts, you're the same. It may be a different sector of your consciousness, but it's still you. You're the person that's in charge. So he was telling the woman, regardless of how people feel about you, regardless of what they say about you, the names that they call you, you're doing this for yourself, and you're doing this because this is what you were put on this earth to do, and you need to, who cares who has an issue with what you're saying. Continue to talk, and the people that you're supposed to reach, you're going to reach them. And I think that that's such an important thing for us to remember, is that it doesn't matter whose opinion and who is right and who is wrong. No matter what you say, no matter what you do, you are in charge of the actions that you take and make. You are in charge of how you feel about yourself. Other people will make you feel a certain way about yourself. But what he was telling her, who is telling you that you're not good enough because you're a black woman? Who is telling you that you're not good enough because you're saying this because you're a woman? Like, who's telling you this? And why do their opinions matter? And that's one thing that we get very hung up on social media. It's like you were saying, I think you were saying that earlier, Candace, like, people's opinions should not matter about what, like nothing that anybody says to you should make a difference. Anybody, or I don't know if I was saying it or if you were saying it, but the way that people comment, the way that the things that people say to other people, none of those, like, they do, but none of those opinions should matter. Because who are these people? Who the hell are these people to tell you that you're not good enough? Or you're not black enough, or you're not smart enough, or you're not man or woman enough. Like, none of the – we're all on an equal playing field. Nobody's better than – nobody's opinion is better than the other. Nobody's money is better than the other, because money is not even a real thing. It's created by the government anyway. But none of these things make people who they are. Their spirit and their soul makes them who they are. And even after they die, their soul still – it still is the same thing that it was on Earth. Wherever it goes, it's not going to change. So you are who you are and not what other people say you are. And social media is very good at making you think that who you are is not who you are and that you have to be somebody else.
Well, you know, it goes back to acceptance, acknowledge, and approval. Those are the three A's.
Yeah, yep.
And the bottom line is, before you, well, let me say this and then we'll move back into that. It's something that I've been working on recently. I've been focused on it, and I've been saying it frequently. And, again, it comes out of some of the research that I'm doing. And that's the beauty about reading and research and doing this type of work, because I've come to realize you only have one enemy. See, the language is very important. There's a piece I'm doing on Congolese cosmology. There was a brother that I had the distinct pleasure of working with. His name is Dr. Kimbandende Fukia. He's a Congolese scholar. And he wrote a book on Congolese cosmology. In fact, Sasha, I taught Congolese cosmology at New Pulse when I did my African cosmology class. And I used Dr. Fukia's work his book on Congolese cosmology. And I used it because his approach focused on language and how language was used and is used by the Congolese people, Central Africa, the original people. How language is used to describe things that are indescribable. But they can attach themselves to the neurons of the brain so that images can be created. And later, millions of years later, that would become Meduneta or hieroglyphs in Egypt. But in Congo, it started using language, and they used nature to teach them about language. And the language that we use, particularly English, is extremely deficient. The words that we use do not really describe what we mean. That's why Malcolm said English was the language of liars. It sounded funny, and we all laughed when he said it, but linguistically that's very true. You can say something, and you wouldn't know what that person meant. And you can use a word like burrow or hair. Okay, if I said hair, do you know if I'm talking about the rabbit? Or my hair on my head or on my body. Or how about if I said red? Would you think that I'm talking about the color?
Yep.
Or would you think that it's the past tense for having read a book?
In the context of the sentence.
But in the Congolese language, the inflection in your voice is what tells you which red you meant or which hair you meant. You couldn't talk and not. Because they use the inflection in their voice like nature. When birds talk, when whales talk, even when rats talk, they have a way of communicating where they tell the other rat or the other porpoise or who what whatever the animal is exactly what they mean. They can't lie in their language.
Wow.
So we're living in a world where we can talk to each other and we don't mean what we say, and unless you understand the context of what I'm saying, you're not going to understand. Like if I said, man, I really like that red pen, you're going to pretty much know I don't mean about the book, that I read the book.
Yeah.
But there are times when I can say, look at that burrow. And talking about the hole, am I talking about the animal?
Oh.
Or am I talking about the place of residence, like the borough of Manhattan, the borough of the Bronx? So as African thinking people, or as original thinking people, we are taking in language, but the problem is that we don't know what we're talking about. Not because we don't have capacity, it's because, and that's what hip-hop did. The beauty of rap is that rap took music and turned it on its head. It took language. Yo, when I was growing up, if you said to a sister, yo, daddy, you are fat, you're in trouble. Okay? But they took the word fat, changed the spelling, P-H-A-T, and they made it something that sisters was hoping you might tell them. That's how they took language and turned it on its head. Like, say, yo, man, that's dope. When I was growing up, dope meant somebody stupid, or it meant taking drugs.
Yeah, yep.
So that language is the kind of thing that as African people, as original thinking people, we have taken and we have moved it into a whole nother level of understanding. So that when I speak, I try to Africanize the English language. So when I talk about approve, accept, and acknowledge, the first thing you have to do is you have to understand one thing, and that is that you only have one enemy. That's the point I was trying to make with language. The word we use as enemy, we take it externally, which goes back to what you're saying. Because if you really approved yourself, acknowledged yourself, accepted yourself, you could go on social media and people could say whatever they wanted to about you.
Yeah.
Because they are not your enemy. Your enemy is that entity within you that allows you to let their opinion enter into you and have an impact on you. Like people say to me, you know, I hope you don't mind. I'm personally, and then they'll tell me something. And I say, well, I hope you don't mind if I tell you that personally, your personal opinion of me is none of my business, and I'd appreciate if you
there
keep your
go.
Damn business to yourself.
There we go.
We have allowed people to enter into our personhood, and we've allowed other people to be that judge of us. Judge yourself. Judge yourself. Approve yourself.
May the judge
bless
judge
yourself.
I.
Yes, I. Rasta. That's what I say. May the judge bless judge I. That's what Jesus said. He who's guilty, cast the first stone, man.
Oh, my God. You've been hanging around with mommy too long.
Hey, listen, after 38 years, you pick up the accent and even some of the attitude.
Lord.
Man, I tell you, mind your crash.
Give me something to catch the door. What?
There we go.
The door?
Yeah.
What is that?
Oh, my God. Oh, goodness.
And when things things get real funky, here come cock-a-fuck.
Oh, gosh. Is mommy laughing? Is she laughing?
Is she sitting here laughing? Yes, she is. She's trying to calm her laugh quietly.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Oh, man. All right. Well, do we have the first song queued up? Let's take a little break.
Yes, let me get that on for everybody.
All right now.
Unconditional love. I'm talking about the stuff that don't wear off. It don't fade. Now it lasts for all these crazy days, these crazy nights. Whether you wrong or you right, your mama can still love you, still feel you, still there for you, no matter what. To my truest thoughts, my truest feelings, all my peers doing years beyond drug dealing. How many caskets can we witness before we see it's hard to live this life without God? So we must ask forgiveness. Ask Mama why I got the urge to die. Witness the tears falling free from my eyes before she could reply. But we were born without a silver spoon. My broken down TV show cartoons in my living room. One day I hope to make it a player in this game. Mama, don't cry, long as we try, maybe things change. Perhaps it's just a fantasy, a life where we don't need no welfare. Where's she with our own family? Maybe it's me that caused it, the fighting and the hurting in my room crying, cause I didn't want to be a burden. Watch mama open up her arms to hug me, and I ain't worried about a damn thing. With unconditional love, this game is in the eyes to see. Don't think change, the future's still inside of me. We must remember that tomorrow comes after the dark, so you will always be in my heart. Unconditional love, the lessons in your eyes to see. Though things change, the future's still inside of me. We must remember that tomorrow comes after the dark, so you will always be in my heart. With unconditional love, just got the message you've been calling all week. Been out here hustling on the streets, ain't had a chance to speak. But you know, with you and me, it's all G. We could never be enemies, cause you've been such a good friend to me. Where would I be without my dogs? No wonder why when times get hard, cause it ain't easy being who we are. Driven by my ambitions, desire higher positions, so I proceed to make tea eternally. And my mission is to be more than just a rap musician, the elevation of today's generation. If I can make them listen, prison ain't what we need. No longer stuck in greed, time to plan, strategize. My family got it, me. We will make something out of nothing. No pleasure in the suffering. Neighborhood will be good if they can cut out all the busting, the liquor and the weed, the cussing. Send their love out to my block. The struggle never stops. The unconditional in the eyes to see. No things change. The future's still inside of me. We must remember that tomorrow comes after the dark, so you will always. while getting paid at the same time. Just had a baby with the same eyes, something inside recently died, these are strange times. How come I never made it? Maybe it's the way I played it in my heart. I know one day I'm gonna be a star. My hopes and all my wishes, so many vivid pictures, and all the currency I'll never even get to see. This fast life soon shatters, cause after all the lights and screams, nothing but my dreams matter. Hoping for better days, maybe a peaceful night, maybe don't cry, cause everything gon' be alright. Just lay your head on my shoulder, don't worry about a thing, baby girl, I'm a soldier. Never treated me bad, no matter who I was, you still came with that unconditional love.
That was beautiful.
Yeah, that was a real nice song. I enjoyed that. Tupac?
Yeah.
Wow, I'm glad it was. I would have been embarrassed if it wasn't, but I could sense his voice. But yeah, that was a
yeah.
real nice
that was a Tupac
voice. That unconditional love?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. That's very nice. I enjoyed that. And it's so
I'll
appropriate to what we're
that.
Talking about.
Exactly. I'll be expecting to hear that on a Saturday at some point from your iPod.
Oh, I'm definitely going to download that. In fact, I was trying to remember the song you played last time that I said I wanted to get that. Got it. You played a song last week that was real nice. And you played.
There's so many songs, and then one of us will say something, and it will trigger us to play a different song.
Yeah, and that's good because that's what makes what we do here on Tuesdays so valuable because, you know, this is all just us. This is us. This could have been us years ago sitting in the front room talking to each other. This is just coming, you know, from, you know, this family. This is what family do. You know, and that unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
The unconditional love is so, but you must have unconditional love for yourself. And we go through a lot every day.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it isn't very good. Some of it isn't good at all. Some things we say to each other, some things that we say about other people is not good. But the one thing that we have got to learn how to do is in realizing the stress of the lives that we live, we have to learn to forgive ourselves. Because when you forgive yourself of your transgressions, you then can forgive other people for what they do against you, and then you can start to repair, which is the root word of reparations. We have to repair ourselves as a people. We did not get the counseling that humans needed after a traumatic experience. We're still living the horror of inhumanity, and we don't own it because and sometimes we brothers try to play off like, you know, you go man up. But inside your heart, you're hurting very badly.
Yes,
you're wondering
exactly.
about your – and this society for a man, not just black men, but men in general, it attacks your personhood.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you wonder, are you qualified to be who you are?
Mm.
And sometimes that questioning of your own self leads you to do things that are not very good for the people around you or for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Men and women have their own ways of being attacked in this society. Black men in particular have their own ways of being. It's not about who gets attacked worse or who has a sisters struggle for their personhood just like the brothers do. It may be in a different way. It may be in a different way, but it's still a struggle to be a woman of pigmentation in this society of African descent. It is not easy. And we brothers have got to come to understand that and to join and do something that is very different. And that is that we have to look at the conditions that we're finding ourselves in and realize the first step in repairing ourselves is to repair ourselves. But after that, it is then to repair ourselves as a community, our relationships that we are having with each other. We have to start to repair them. Because the first group that can repair those relationships is going to be the first group that's going to take over America. Because, and I'm going to tell you all now, if you want to read a book that prophesies this, that you're experiencing and watching right now, go out. I prefer you go to a black-owned bookstore, but if you can't, you can order it. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, back in the day, it was called The Fall of America. And if you read that book, you'll understand exactly what we're going through now. He prophesied this. This is what we're going through right now. I've been waiting for this to happen. I used to always tell your mother, when stuff would go down 20 years ago, 25 years ago, I said, baby, you ain't seen nothing yet. And here we are in 2019. And we literally are experiencing an American Civil War revolution.
Wow.
This is a combination of an American revolution and a civil war. And the reason why it's a combination of the two is because we never solved the problem in the first place. The American Revolution never solved the problem. Right now, Britain is about to fall. With that Brexit thing, trust me, they're about to fall. Spain is about to fall. Greece, Italy, all those countries are falling. They're depopulating. Their economy is crashing. Europe is breaking up. Talk about a Willie Lynch. Talk about white-on-white crime. That's what's going on in the European Union. As we speak, this is what's going on. A family. I don't care about what's going on with them. I knew this was happening because I read The Fall of America. I knew this was coming. Marcus Garvey told us this was coming. Bob Marley told us this was coming when he wrote the song War. Listen to War sometime. Listen to what Bob Marley was telling us. But then back it up with the song that he sang called Africa Unite. We must have a United States of Africa. African diaspora should become a country of the Organization of African American Unity, or African Unity, OAU. So whether you're from Jamaica, or whether you're from Sweden, whether you're from the United States or Puerto Rico, we should have a representative that is the African diasporian member, that the African diaspora should be counted as a country in Africa. Because Africa is the future of the world. Africa has all of the resources, the solar power, the wind power, the water power, the jewel power, the mineral power is all in Africa. Africa is rich naturally. Ain't no make-believe money. Africa can back their stuff up. That's why they hit Gaddafi. Because Gaddafi was attempting to change the basis of money. He was about to make it so that the value of trade would become in your resources that you had. And if that had happened economically, it would have changed the structure of America. It would have changed the structure of the world, because in order for you to have wealth, you would have to have natural resources. So we got to understand this. We got to get ourselves together. We got to stop fighting amongst ourselves. But the first thing, before we stop fighting amongst ourselves, we have to stop fighting ourselves. And once we stop fighting ourselves, then we'll stop fighting ourselves.
Wow. I need you to say that again for the people, Daddy, because that's powerful. I don't know if they caught it all.
Okay. I was using the singular, ourselves. We have to stop fighting ourselves. When I said about the enemy within is the only enemy we have, everything else outside of ourselves is an obstacle. And it goes back to what you were saying about what social media is doing, how we allow people to get in underneath us by insulting. And I know it hurts. It bothers. I mean, they, you know, they've come after me before. And to a certain sense, it does tinge. It does tinge.
I was fighting people, too, for you.
Yeah, but then but then I stop for a minute and I say, but who are they? What have they done? What's your workload say?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so you begin to say that if hey, I'm living my best life.
I'm trying to go back and forth with you.
Okay. That's it. Think about that song. That's why I enjoy that song so much. I don't have time to go back and forth with you because I'm too busy living my best life. Even if that best life has obstacles that I got to get over, it's still my best life because it's my only life. And I ain't got time to deal with you. Who are you? And if your stuff is that smooth and supreme, then teach me because I want that kind of life. But if your life ain't all that it's cracked up to be, you need to go into your room, take a time out.
No, he didn't say time out.
So once you take care of, we have got to stop fighting ourselves. Because once you stop fighting yourself, then you can start dealing with other people. First solve ourselves. What are your inner demons? What are you battling? Fragility? Sadness? Questions about your capacity as a man or as a woman? Are you fulfilling your passions? Are you doing for yourself? And if you find that you don't, be strong enough and brave enough to own it and own the fact that you could step up your game. I think that this is a personal opinion of me, looking at me. I think that one of my strongest points is that when someone gives me constructive criticism, I'm willing to embrace it and see how much of that is actually reality. I am willing to correct my way if someone who I believe cares for me or even don't care for me says something. I will analyze it, and if they're on point, I will adjust. I will adjust, and I think that's a very strong point. That's it. Take the sense out, the nonsense, and keep on keeping on.
Because it ain't over until we win.
That's it.
And that's I was going to say that's one of the best strategies, too, because it throws people off, because a lot of times people are ready for a fight. No, like people aren't, they're gearing up for the fight. And then it's like whenever you see somebody and they're in their head and they're asking a question and then the person says yes, and the person that's talking automatically assumed that they said no and they stop in the middle of the sentence like, wait, did you just say yes? Like you throw people off.
Hey, listen, I can give you two basic examples of what I'm talking about. I can give you two basic. They ain't nothing heavy, but it's just two things that told me that all of a sudden, I said, why didn't I think about that before? Let me start with your mother. Years ago, your mother told me, she said, you need to clean your hairbrush. And I looked at her because I never cleaned my hairbrush or my comb. And when I said that, I mean, well, at the time I used Dettol, you know, which is an antiseptic. And then, you know, alcohol. But I never thought. She said, you comb your hair, brush your hair every day, and all the things that you wash your hair every week to get out is in that brush. If you don't clean your brush, it's like putting the same dirt back up on your head. And I said, you know, I never thought of it. So from that day on, once a week, I clean my brushes and my comb. I never thought about that. But, Sasha, every so often when I enjoy my little bit of soda, remember when you said you should always drink soda with a straw?
Yeah.
Because
yep.
the soda doesn't go on your teeth. The sugar doesn't
uh-huh.
go on your teeth, which then creates
mm-hmm.
problems in terms of decay.
Yep.
And I never thought about
that
before. I never thought about that before, but once you said that to me, it made absolute sense. Now, I'm using those examples because they're soft examples and they're everyday
yeah.
examples. But it gets even
yeah.
heavier
mm-hmm.
than that with people who will tell you something that you'll have to stop and say, you know something? They're right.
Mm.
And the strength comes from you being able to admit and own that they are correct and that you are not as correct as you should be, and you decide, I'm going to do something about that.
Many people will cut off their nose to spite their face, though.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
sometimes they will. That's right. They will. And the unfortunate thing is that when you take that attitude with somebody, they say, well, I ain't never going to go back to that person with anything. And so you'll be missing some very important things about yourself that you need to learn. But when you say to somebody, like, for instance, even with my kindergarten children, when I used to teach them, and they would tell me something, and I would say, wow, Kwame, that's really,
oh,
man, that's
honest.
Really intelligent. I never thought about that before, man. That's fantastic. I said, man, you taught me something. And the children, five-year-olds, would say, I taught Brother Booker T something? Wow. Because, you know, how many times do we as adults tell children, wow, you're smart. You taught me something. Because we always
mm-hmm.
try to get a sense that, and then we don't want to embrace the fact that, wow, that child is right. You know, they'll tell you something
yeah.
about yourself.
Listen,
now,
I have
of course,
no problem admitting when Christian tells me something that he's right, even though he reminds me. Do you remember that one time that I was right and you were wrong? And he didn't let me live it down for my whole life. He's
yeah.
like, so this is the second time that I was right and you were wrong. I'm like, two times out of 7 years, damn it.
Yep. Well, you see, that's the other thing. You know, that and then every time you're in class they or at home, they're always trying to teach you something. That's the other thing that happens.
No.
They spend the rest of your life, because once you let them, but they feel so good that
yeah.
that you've let them know that you've taught them something, you can't shut them up after that.
Yeah. Well,
then they become your teacher.
Yeah.
But that's all
okay.
part of it.
That's the one thing that you've taught us to do is to, you know, celebrate the good as well as, you know, give constructive criticism to what needs constructive criticism. Because that's where
yeah.
a lot of people, that's the feedback that I'm getting, you know, now in my new role as management is that, you know, not only am I correcting what needs to be corrected, but I'm giving praise and, you know, valuing those that, you know, a lot of times we point out the flaws, but we don't acknowledge the good that you're doing. So then in turn, we look and we're like, well, all you do is, you know, ridicule or, you know, point fingers at me, and you don't realize all the good that I'm doing, you know. And a lot of times it just takes recognition. And so for me, when people say, like, give me good, you know, feedback, I'm like, I appreciate your appreciation for, you know, what's
uh-huh.
been done.
That's always my answer. I appreciate your appreciation. I got that from
and
you.
And it goes back to acknowledgement. And it
yeah,
goes
mm-hmm.
back to acknowledgement. You are acknowledging them. You are celebrating their success. And that's very important for human beings. That's one of the important things in leadership. Is that you know your interactions with people, they value their interactions with you because they know that. And then also when you must correct them or criticize them. That they can accept that also, because if they know that
yeah.
you're giving them positive feedback, they know that you're giving them the other type of constructive criticism in their best interest.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing.
So,
there's
so,
nothing wrong. Go ahead. Sorry.
No. You go on, because I was going to say that's a beautiful thing. So whatever
mm-hmm.
you're going to say, because I know you're going to follow up.
And there's nothing wrong. With, like, even, like, a lot of people don't want to, how do you say, a lot of people don't want to reward people for good behavior that they should have been doing anyway. But there's certain things that don't necessarily deserve a reward. But there's certain things that people just feel good. Like there was something, I forgot what it was the other day that me and Christian were talking, and he was so, he never wanted to talk to anybody in the morning. He always said he wasn't a morning person. He didn't want to say good morning. But recently he has started to say good morning to people. I said, Christian, you do not have to talk to them. You do not have to be friendly or anything. But when you walk into a room, just add some good energy and say good morning. And he's recently started, like, he said good morning to people. He says, how are you? If they ask him how he is, he responds. Aww. And the first time he did it, I was just like, I was so excited. And the way that his face lit up, I had no problem. Like, regardless of whether he should have been doing it, he shouldn't have been doing, whether kids are supposed to do it, he said, well, however your opinion is, the way his face lit up for feeling good about my acknowledging that I was excited about something he did, that's all that matters to me. And that's one thing that I feel like a lot of times we do things for other people's benefit. And trying to control our kids and trying to make sure they sit down and don't say anything, do this, it's really not for us, because when we're home, we let them do certain things that we don't let them do outside. And I think that, and I know that a lot of people are going to have an issue with what I'm about to say, but a lot of the things that we do come from slavery. A lot of the things that we do come from the fact that we don't want our kids to act up in front of certain people, but other people let their kids do whatever they want. Like, kids deserve to be kids. I have been guilty of them. I can't say that I haven't, but sometimes, you know, I'm just like, oh, we're in this place, you can't do this. Oh, we're here, you can't say this. And I feel guilty about it because he's 7 years old. He should be able to have fun. If I bring him to a mall and he acts a certain way, it's my fault because I brought a 7-year-old to an enclosed area and he has a lot of energy. So it's my fault. I shouldn't get upset at him. In the morning, if we're late, I shouldn't rush him to get ready because I woke up late, and I've done that before. And it's my fault that I got up late. But a lot of times as adults, we don't take into consideration that, number one, our kids are kids, and number two, our kids are human. A lot of times we treat our kids the way that we were treated before we had freedom. And while there is some benefit to a little bit of structure, a lot of times we do things because we epigenetically pass down what is expected from us. And that's something that I'm not willing to do. In the same way that you, Daddy, let us be human and let us ask questions and let us do certain things, that's what's most important to me when it comes to him and when it comes to how he is. And I think that we all do that with him. We all have conversations with him. And that's why everybody that ever meets him thinks that he's wonderful. Because we embrace the human in him as opposed to just treating him like he's a child. And I think that we need to do that more with each other, with our children, so that our children can grow into better people. Because if our children, if we're treating our children the way that we got treated on the plantation, all we're going to ever be able to breed is more slaves and more slave mentality. We need to start treating our kids like human beings as opposed to treating them like they're our property.
Well,
I do ask
Christian
to go get things for me sometimes, you know. But
but that's honestly like how kids learn is what they're taught. We can't like try to not teach them different things and say, oh, it's just because I say so, because that's how they learn. You know, that's where we get the way we are from is the way in which we're raised. You know, we can only do what we know. So when you see your kids acting up, when you see them cussing, when you see them not able to vocalize themselves and do certain things, it's because you're not allowing them to do it, and you're not teaching them, and you're not being the example to them, as bad as it may sound. But you're not instilling that into them, because when you do, you'll see the Christians of the world. You know, he was there was no Google Gaga. He was having full-on sentences. He was, you know, able to verbalize himself, but he's never had a temper tantrum. He's never thrown himself
as
on the floor. You know,
it doesn't happen.
The department store throwing up, they're like not able to verbalize themselves. Like, he'll tell you in a second what's wrong with him. Mm-hmm. And it's because we said, Christian, what's wrong? tell me what's going on. And he will verbalize to you. It may not be what you want to hear, but he will tell you what he is feeling. And that's the hard part of a lot of people. As adults, they can't tap into the way in which they feel because as children, they were never allowed to have those sort of feelings. So they don't know, they can't pinpoint, oh, I'm mad, oh, I'm sad, oh, I'm happy, because they've never been able to experience those sort of feelings and tie one to one.
Yeah, because I tell him often, you know, in the morning he may have an attitude if he's tired. But I say, instead of you having an attitude, express how you're feeling, and then we don't have to talk until you've woken up. Because I'm not in the mood to talk, but I'm a little bit more chipper in the morning. Anybody that's been around me at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm way too chipper. It's like I've had coffee already, even though I haven't. And most people are like, if you don't shut your mouth, not Christian, he doesn't, but I'm saying just in general, most adults are just like, if you don't calm yourself, you're happy ass down. But, you know, he has a right to be upset. He has a right to be tired. He just doesn't have a right to be disrespectful. And that's the one thing that I think that we need to learn is even as adults, you have the right to feel how you feel. You have the right to not want to talk to somebody. You have the right to say no, but you don't have the right to, if you want to be nasty, unless you're returning some energy that someone's giving you, if you feel like being nasty, just walk away. Like I think it's crazy, especially like if you're angry and you take it out on somebody else, if you feel that you're starting to take it out on somebody, walk away. And I don't think, and it all ties into the conversation that we're having about social media. Social media has taken away our ability to interact with other people.
Well, if you got nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all.
No, but that's not even relevant for our society anymore, because if you don't have anything nice to say, you're going to write it under somebody's, picture on Instagram, or you're going to tell them in the comment section of YouTube that their voice is annoying and that they look like Casper the Friendly Ghost. I was very offended when I saw that message. It's funny now. But when I saw that at like 6 o'clock in the morning, I was like, why would I look at these comments at 6 o'clock in the morning when I first get up? But we feel like it's okay, you know, even with people saying things on daddy videos. Like, they don't take into consideration that there are young people or his kids are going to be seeing the messages that people are putting. Like, there's something of a disconnect in the humanity of people's brains. Because me seeing that, like, you're talking about my father. I want to go and fight you just because, like, I don't fight anybody. I don't even kill, I might kill some bugs if they're in my house. But anyway, I don't, you know, I'm not a violent person. I don't do things like that. But when you mess with my family, I want to hurt your feelings. Or I want to, you know, be mean. But nobody takes into consideration that we're all human. And, you know, everybody hates people like Kim Kardashian and, you know, people have negative things to say. But they're still human. When they, I mean, and it's their choice to be who they are, but they're still, they're for whatever reason they decided to share their life with humanity, even if we don't agree with it, it's still not okay to go underneath pictures and call her, like, all these dirty so-and-sos. It's still a disgusting thing, no matter how you feel about anybody. If you don't have, like you said, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. If you don't have anything nice to say about somebody, don't even put that energy out in the world where the karma can come back to you and harm you cosmically, and then your grandchildren might be able to feel the karma that you put out into the universe because you had no control over your Twitter finger, like the president. Twitler. That's what they called him. I was like, what was it? They called him Twitler. Because Hitler and Twitter, no?
That's hilarious.
It was hilarious. We have no type of connection with people, and it's really unfortunate. Because if we don't like something, I mean, people just go on to things and tear people apart. But it goes back to what we were just talking about. We don't know how to teach our kids to be human. Well, and it's hard because, you know, I think you and I were having this conversation before, Jay. I think I was having this conversation with, like, is it wrong for you to have done everything that you could to raise us to be as great as possible, but we live in a society that is very hard to deal with people like that. So then sometimes I come into, you know, a crossroad where do I teach them how to deal with pieces of trash, or do I just continue to make him a better person and make him as good as possible? Or do I try to find something in the middle, or do I explain? Do I make him a great, or do I help to make him a great person, but explain, you know, that there's such not nice people? Like, it's a difficult thing to try to figure out what you're supposed to do when it comes to raising kids and being around people and being around your family. Because we live in such a disgusting world, but it's so beautiful at the same time. And you try to get people to realize that, but so many people just don't get it. And it's hard to find a balance between the two.
Well, exactly what you said is exactly what you do. Because I think that our conversations that we've had and the things we've talked about, I think this also helps adults. And the way in which I would talk to a child is the way I would talk to an adult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they're, because we're still, we still are human beings. And there are things that bother us. And I think that I still, things that people say, it does impact you. And it's not, you're not telling the truth if you say, oh, it don't bother me. It does bother you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you're a human being. But the point is, what I have learned, and I'm getting better at, I'm still working, but I'm getting better at it, is I've learned how to get out of that sunken place quicker. That's what I do in life. I learn how to embrace my humanity and how to feel that with all the great things that people have said to me. You know, they say that sometimes if you get 100 comments, 85 are absolutely wonderful, 15 are absolutely horrible. You tend to focus on the 15 horrible ones instead of the 85 great ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what I've attempted to do, I'm still learning, is to focus on the 85 good ones. Respect the 15 horrible ones, because everybody got a right to their opinion. But like I say, your opinion is not my business.
Yep, pretty much.
And so, you know, with children through things, we have to talk to them about, you know, there are people in the world that will hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Like what I believe is happening right now to those children down at the southern border. And I think that what Humpty Trumpty is doing and the reason why he's firing so many people and hiring other people is because he's beginning to learn that even in some of the most horrible of the ones that he's hired, there is still a stroke of humanity in them, that there are things that they just can't do anymore to people. But I believe he's searching for the people that are as decadent as he is. I honestly and truthfully believe that they enjoy hurting those children. Now think about what I said, because there are people that are saying, what's wrong with them? We have to realize there are human beings that enjoy hurting people. The same
That's
way
crazy.
You have people that will attack elders.
Yeah.
The same way you have those three churches in Louisiana, the same way you had that young man go into that church and shoot 9 people, they're fundamentally cowards, and they're very fragile. So they go places to do harm, and they do harm to people who are the least able to protect themselves, such as those that might be mentally or physically challenged. Elders who can't fight back, children who can't fight back. And I believe that there are human beings that enjoy inflicting pain on those children. So that while we're wondering how horrible standard as an African people, they did that to us and they enjoyed it. Their energy level was actually propelled upwards. The same way you go to church and you feel the Holy Ghost and you get that feeling, that good feeling that the Spirit has entered you, that's what they get when they hurt people. And we're mischaracterizing them. The President of the United States is enjoying watching those little sweet children being separated from their families, being destroyed. That's not everybody. But there are people, even the 15%, that enjoy it.
Mm.
And for as long as you're looking for the good in them, you're wasting your time. My mother used to tell me, you're not getting water from a rock, you're not getting blood from a turnip, and you're not going to get morality from most people of European descent.
Wow.
And she told me, Skip, it ain't about being fair. Life ain't fair.
Oh, you tell me that all the time.
That's right. That's where I learned it. It ain't fair. You know, we always up here, oh, it's not fair. But life ain't fair. You've got some horrible people in the world that enjoy inflicting pain on the least able. You would think you would protect the child. You would protect someone that was mentally or physically impaired or challenged. You would protect an elder who can't fight back. No, you come upon an elder that's walking down the street with a cane, you'll take the cane and beat them and rob them with their cane. Now, in our minds, we can't fathom that. But there are people that enjoy that. And that's why some of them become police. They're recruited specifically. The sister in race war said she was a sergeant in the police force in Los Angeles. She said they recruited white supremacists from Mississippi to join the Los Angeles police force. They knew what they were getting. So that we sit here surprised when those three churches in Louisiana are burned down. Don't be surprised. Dr. Clark would say, I'm surprised.
I'm surprised that you're surprised.
Of course they're going to go after your church. They're going to bomb the church. They're going to bomb churches. They're going to destroy churches. Because as their fragility demands, they think that it's an easy way. So they're going after soft targets. And they're going to enjoy it. They would not enjoy going after someone that would knock them down on their heads. Because they're cowards. We have to look at this a little bit differently than what we've experienced. Don't be surprised that they go after churches or they go after children. Or they go after mothers with children. Characterize them as rapists and drug dealers and no good people. Don't be surprised at that, because that's what gives them the ability to inflict pain on people. It's a sad world, but we have to tell our children that there are people like that in the world to prepare them for the future. We have to prepare them for the future by telling them the truth. And so when I would tell you, you know, it's not fair. Okay, but life ain't fair. And this will happen. And this is how you can then overcome that challenge. This is what you do. That's all we can do, family. Prepare our young people for the reality of what they face. It's sad, but it's true. Tell them the truth. Tell the children the truth. As they go through the situation, you don't have to hit them before it happens, but just be the type of person that they can come to trust.
Yeah, you have to prepare for the worst and enjoy it if it doesn't happen.
And as they experience it, you remind them. See, this is what I was talking to you about when I told you that there are some people that are not very nice. They're not. And there are people who are wonderful.
We go over that.
There are people that are wonderful, but learn how to judge. Teach them critical analysis. Let them learn how to embrace people. How to learn. That's all we can do.
Wow. And on that note, do we have this last song that, you know, I think we played it before, but, you know, I have to say, this is like one of my favorite songs, so I never get tired of hearing it.
Okay.
I'll say that one. I actually found one that I thought might have gone. So we can play this one though. We can play that one another time.
Oh, what's up with you? Since you heard that one already, maybe we'll play the one that you're thinking of.
Well, let's introduce that one then. And of course we can play the one that you were thinking of another time. We can keep the audience guessing.
It always relates. It always relates.
Absolutely. And I think you're both going to be very, very satisfied with the song choice.
I'll be the judge of that. Thank you very much. But, you know, just to the people out there, you know, we have to just maintain ourselves, love ourselves, allow ourselves to be ourselves, and not give a darn what anybody else has to say, because guess what? We ain't got time to go back and forth with you. Because we live in our lives, right, Daddy?
There we go. I'm with you.
Well, you know what? We might have to make a moment to go back and forth, because it looks like we actually have a caller. Let's see if it's someone that was calling to ask a question, or we might have to go back and forth with everyone.
Okay,
but let's see if it's someone
that
was asking a question or somebody that was just listening in through the phone. I see 480737. Did you have a question or were you just listening? The phone number.
Oh, peace, family. Peace, family.
Oh, hotel.
Hotel. Yes, I was just listening in. I rarely get an opportunity because I'm usually trying to get off of work. And I just wanted to make sure I caught the broadcast.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. You're most welcome. So I'm just listening. I'm enjoying what I'm hearing, and just the powerful impartation that you all are providing for us today.
Oh, thank you so much, brother.
Thank you so much. We just wanted to make sure that if you wanted to ask, we just wanted to make sure we acknowledge you. It's a lot about acknowledgement tonight. So thank you so much for listening.
All right, hotel family.
Hotel brother. Man.
All right, so let me play this song as we exit the night, and we will be back next week with another episode. And it's been a pleasure.
Hotel.
for surety. Yeah. Don't forget your history.